Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on June 9th, 2015 at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their true story based upon the theme, Oops, I Changed My Mind. Today's story comes from Stephen Begletter and is titled My Father and Football. Thanks for listening.
Hi. All right. So I'm lying flat on my back, feeling the sweat pour down my forehead into my ears, and looking at the sky, and then also tasting blood in my mouth. And I'm thinking, how did I get here? All right. How did I get here? When I was 10, my parents would shuttle me off to temple every Sunday, and I would come home. This one particular Sunday was a little bit different when I came home, because when I came home, the media trucks were in front of my house, and I wondered, what's this about? So I barged through the media, said, Mom, what's up? She said, well, your dad has to go to Germany. So I go, okay. So I get on my street clothes, and then I go off to our playground and get ready for street football. Now, I kind of grew up in a very tough neighborhood in Cleveland. Street football was brutal. Basically, you didn't wear any helmets, any pads, or anything. What you did is you got on the field, and like Greek civilization, you would talk about your week, how everything went, how's your family, and then you'd go out in the field and try to kill each other. And that's how we played football every Sunday. So that Sunday, I told my best friend, Nikki Marino, what had happened. I said, the news is in front of my house, and my dad's going to Germany. I know what's going on. And he looks at me and goes, well, that's cool. I go, okay. So Nikki, being my best friend since diapers, was a pretty cool guy until he was six, and he was hit by a car and had a metal plate put in his head, which made for interesting party tricks, because we'd always put magnets on his head. And people always wondered, what Nikki would do. But Nikki also had some anger issues. And so what better place to put them out is on a football field, right? So I always wanted Nikki on my team, because he's the kind of guy that if he had the ball, he would give you the ball so he could tackle you and push you down. He was a good man. So we'd basically play this Sunday football. And then I came back home, and the media was gone. And I said, Mom, what's this about? And she said, well, your father has to go back to Germany because he has to testify against a concentration camp guard. This is the first I ever heard that my father was in a concentration camp. So as you can imagine, as a 10-year-old, it's like, okay, what's this about? The following summer, he takes off to Germany, and I'm back on the field playing football. And this time I sort of am older, I'm basically becoming more of a man, 11-year-old, and I'm figuring out what's going on in my life. And so football season kind of ends, and my father comes back from Germany, and the media comes back to our house again. And this time in the newspaper on the front cover, I see my mom, my dad, on the front cover of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Which was kind of cool, but then I started wondering why are there. So I actually read the story, and I realized that the reason why my father went back is he had been in a concentration camp for 4 years of his life. And he basically was going back to Germany to testify against the guard that led the concentration camp. So you know, I'm going back to the football field, and now I'm even more confused than I was before. But then my friend Nikki comes up to me and goes, in seventh grade, we should join the football team. I go, okay. He goes, you get to wear helmets and pads and all that stuff, and girls really like it. So I go, okay, that's a no-brainer. So, you know, seventh grade happens around, and like street football, school football, you show up, you're on the team, right? If you can survive coaches, which I'd never even worked under before, you can survive anything. And we had two coaches that were particularly sadistic. McFarland was one of them, who loved to spit chewing tobacco in your face, just for the fun of it. And then Schroeder, who said something, hustle, hustle, seen Jane Russell get a bustin' mouth, which I had no idea what that meant, but I later found out who Jane Russell was, and then it, oh, triggered off. So another thing I started doing in eighth grade is I wanted to get to know my dad more. So the only way I could do that was to work with him, because he was a bit of a workaholic. And so every Saturday, I would go to work with him at the Premier Sales Army-Navy store in Cleveland, Ohio. So I finally got the nerve to ask him. I said, okay, what's going on? I mean, what was it like in the concentration camp? And who is this guy? And, you know, he said, well, here the story was, this guy would sit in a chair, and they'd wake us up at night, and he said, you go to the right, you go to the left. And basically, you know, the people on the left went to the gas chamber. And so this is how my father survived. I don't know how he survived, to be honest with you. So I'm on the football field again, right? So I am by nature a pretty passive person. Those who know me kind of say, yeah. So I'm on the football field, but I'm trying to prove myself. So what I start imagining is all the people who are playing against me are Nazis, right? So suddenly I'm 13, 14, right? Pubic hair and all that stuff. And I'm looking at all these Nazis out on the field. And I go, yeah, I can tackle them. I can bring them down. I can be a hero. Just didn't happen. It wasn't part of me. It wasn't my personality. In fact, my best friend, Jim Fisher, came up to me and said, you know, you'd be really good if you're aggressive. And this is an aggressive game. But, you know, it was still my place, and I stayed on the team. I primarily sat on the bench, which was okay. I got to watch the games and, you know, and run around and stuff like that. And that was my junior high year. So I, for some reason, I decided to continue this crazy notion of being a football player. So I tried out for the JV team, and like junior high, the JV team was, you show up, you're on the team. So I go, great, I'm on the team. So actually, I kind of got promoted to being on special teams. And if you don't know what special teams are, it basically is that, you know, you kick the ball, and then you run down as fast as you can down the field, and you try to tackle the guy with the ball. And I was really awful. I would actually dodge people who were running at me. And it's like, okay, it's not my sport. But I played. I got to sit, you know, on the bench and, you know, and throughout this whole thing, actually, my dad never came to any of these games. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm playing football because I want to prove something to my dad, right? But he never really showed up, which is okay. My mom did. So she wore the pants in the family, right? And so I decided to join the varsity team. Okay, is this self-abuse or what? Self-infliction? Just kill me, right? So I joined the varsity team, and once again, you show up. It's a little bit different when you're in varsity football in high school. You actually have to prove yourself. So one of the ways you prove yourself is you begin the summer with what they call two practices in one day that begin at 8:30 in the morning, and you put all this gear on, which is like 40 pounds of gear in your helmet, and this is Cleveland, Ohio in August. It's 98 degrees with 80% humidity. It's awful. But we did it. So you put all this gear on, and they would actually give us salt tablets. I kind of felt like a horse, right? So we wouldn't faint, and many people did faint throughout these practices. So the first week we go through these practices, and we're doing all these drills, and you know, you start off your practice by running four times around the track and all your gear, and then you go push heavy things, which, you know, try to push them as far as you can, and then you go beat up on all your friends. It's football. So I did this for 1 week, all right? And I actually lasted for that 1 week. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go back. So I go back on Monday morning, the second week of football, and I am ready, okay? I'm going to make this team. I'm going to do whatever it takes. Everyone is a Nazi out there, and I'm going to get them. But it's not really me. So Monday morning, ooh, is that time to go? So Monday morning, the coaches, who were no better than the coaches in junior high, decided that they were going to assign us the positions because they had a pretty good idea of who we were and stuff. And I was kind of a big guy. You know, I weighed about 175, 6 feet. You know, I was in high school back then. So they decide for some reason that I would make a good offensive tackle. Now, tackles are big, right? So one of the drills you have to do to prove yourself to make this football team is they put you against someone who's sort of your size, and you do this exercise. And this is kind of crazy. You basically like two mountain goats, you know? You kind of sit in front of each other and look at each other, and then with all your strength and energy, you run into their heads. It's like sumo wrestlers in reality. So the guy they put me against was about 120 pounds heavier than me, and he was about 10 inches taller than me. He was big. He was massive. He was a wall. But, you know, this is my chance to prove myself, okay? So I basically, we get into position. I get into the three-point stance, and I'm wearing my helmet, and I'm looking at this guy. He's looking at me. We're giving each other the eye, and we're kind of, you know, doing the machismo thing. And suddenly the whistle blows, and I'm thinking in my head, okay, this is it, you know? I'm going to, like, annihilate Hitler. I'm going to get rid of all this. Like, this is going through my head. This is my motivation. This is going to do it. And I run into this wall, and I fall about 3 feet back onto my back, okay? And this is the moment where I'm going, okay, whoops, I got to make a change here. Somehow that knock to the head kind of cleared my head. And it was at that moment I'm lying on my back with the sweat, blood in my mouth, and I'm looking up and I'm thinking, I don't want to play this game anymore. It's not me. I can't do this thing. So, you know, the coach is like, I see him kind of blurry, helps me up, and he goes, okay, why don't you take a shower, come back in the afternoon? So I go, great. So I actually call my mom. I said, can we have lunch? And she says, sure. And so, we have lunch, and I'm, like, really nervous because I don't know what to say because I've never really quit anything. I'm really stubborn. And so I looked at her really sheepishly, and I go, you know, I don't want to play football anymore. And she looks at me and goes, that's great. So it's like, wow, why am I doing this to myself, okay? And so that's about it. A little addendum. I called my mom because I wanted to kind of verify the story. And she goes, yeah, I remember we went to Damon's. You had this. And your face was black and blue. And you had blood coming out of your mouth. So she goes, yeah, I was really happy you stopped playing football. And that's my story.
Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. The bookstore at the University of Montana. A local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. TopHatLounge.com. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel, custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provide the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Rock and Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people. RockandRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavolny of Missoula Soundworks. MissoulaSoundworks.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and especially to the storytellers. Brian Upton, Caitlin Hoffmeister, Tracy Worley, Stephen Begletter, Alex Alvier, Kelly Buma, Carla Thielen, and Lily Gladstone. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and to learn about themes for 2016. TellUsSomething.org. Thanks for listening.